I hope in these three examples we can extract principles to apply to other symbols that are commonly deemed pagan. Unless you believe that certain symbols have magical powers, the question to ask is, what does this symbol mean to people today? And if a person does believe that certain symbols have magical powers, he is, in a sense, practicing magic himself by ascribing power to a geometric design. Believe it or not, one common practice that is often denounced as pagan and idolatrous is the celebration of birthdays. Critics of the celebration of birthdays point out that in the Bible, birthday celebrations are mentioned only in conjunction with Pharaoh and Herod, two unseemly characters. Although this argument was resurrected in modern times by groups such as the Jehovah's Witnesses, it goes back to the 3rd century and the writings of Origen of Alexandria. He states, "And on birthdays, when the lawless word reigns over them, they dance so that their movements please that word. Someone before us has observed what is written in Genesis about the birthday of Pharaoh, and has said that the worthless man who loves things connected with birth keeps birthday festivals. And I, taking the suggestion from him, find nowhere in Scripture that a birthday was kept by a righteous man. For Herod was more unjust than that famous Pharaoh, for the latter killed a chief baker on his birthday feast, but the former killed John." One is led to believe, however, that in the birthday celebrations of Origen's day, there was much more involved than cake and presents. It was most likely a day associated with superstition, astrology, omens, drunkenness, and perhaps even a sacrifice to a pagan deity. Origen was thus rightly concerned about believers participating in such immorality. But it would be wrong to associate every celebration of a birthday with paganism. Obviously, biblical characters kept track of their birthdays in that they knew how old they were, and there is the ancient cross-cultural and religious practice of celebrating one's birthday. Some suggest that the modern-day birthday cake goes back to ancient pagan Rome. But it is also probable that the Romans inherited it from a previous civilization. The question once again becomes, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Jewish tradition, on the other hand, has never had a problem with the celebration of birthdays. Commenting on the phrase in Genesis chapter 40 and verse 20, "Thus it came about on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants," the Midrash Shecher Tov states that it is common to cherish the day on which one is born and hold a party. The assumption is not automatically, because a pagan does it, it is wrong. Various other rabbinic texts refer to birthdays as happy occasions and times of blessing. Midrash Tanhuma refers to Isaac's birthday, the first of Nisan, as a happy occasion, Simcha b'Simcha. As a whole, though, birthdays were not made a big deal of in Jewish tradition until recently with the Chabad movement, resurrecting the spiritual significance of one's birthday. The Lubavitcher Rebbe recommended observing customs surrounding one's birthday, such as reading from the Torah scroll in the synagogue on the Shabbat before one's birthday, giving extra tzedakah, that is charity, on one's birthday, dispensing blessings on others, and holding a party for family and friends. It is also taught that it is a good day to take spiritual stock of oneself and make resolutions for the coming year. One should even recite the bracha Shechianu, "Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has kept us alive, sustained us, and allowed us to reach this season." The one thing that Jewish law is leery of is the practice of blowing out candles on a cake. Rabbis such as Avraham Blumenkrantz believe that the practice of lighting candles is forbidden because it is a pagan custom, according to Philochorus, the Greek historian. Ralph and Adeline Linton, in their book The Lore of Birthdays, write, "The custom of lighted candles on the cake started with the Greeks. Philochorus, an ancient Greek historian, records that on the sixth day of each month, the birthday of Artemis, the fertility goddess of the moon and the hunt, honey cakes round as the moon and lit with tapers were placed on the temple altars of this goddess." Once again, this is speculative, but the custom of blowing out candles and making a wish seems to beg for some kind of superstitious pagan origin. Others feel that this custom has been totally secularized and no one thinks of Roman gods when they blow out candles on a birthday cake anymore. This is probably another case where everyone will have to decide for themselves if this practice is appropriate. While Jewish tradition stresses celebrating one's birthday according to the date on the Hebrew calendar, the famous rabbis Ibn Ezra and Sadia Gaon both felt that birthdays and ages should be determined by the solar calendar. Suffice to say, regardless of how we come out on the issue of the birthday candles, the celebration of one's birthday is not inherently pagan. After all, everyone has a birthday. Another false assumption is that somehow the Christian practice of resting and worshiping on Sunday morning is linked to some sort of pagan sun worship practice. It is commonly thought that because the first day of the week was called Sunday, that the sun was worshipped on this day in first century Rome and in other cultures. While it is true that the sun has been a popular object of deification and worship throughout history, there is no record either in Rome nor in any other religion of people worshipping the sun on the first day of the week. In Rome, worship of the sun took place annually on days such as December 25th with the birth of Mithra, the sun god, obviously in conjunction with the winter solstice. When the Roman calendar was established, the days of the week were linked to one's astrological signs and horoscope and not to a religious practice associated with that day. Thus, each day was named after one of the seven planets of classical astronomy: the Moon, Mercury, Venus, the Sun, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. So Monday was associated with the Moon, but the Moon was never an object of common worship in Rome. Furthermore, ancient Israel was the only culture to take a rest one day a week, and therefore the Christian practice of resting on Sunday could not be an imitation of a pagan idea. It's an imitation of the Jewish practice of Sabbath keeping. The entire assumption that the Christian veneration of Sunday had to do with adopting the Roman day of worship or worship of the sun god is perhaps the biggest myth of the paganoia community. It's a pure fabrication that demonizes Christian practice. So how did Christians end up resting and worshiping on Sunday instead of the biblical Shabbat on Saturday? It began first with the neglect of the biblical Sabbath. Although Jewish believers in Yeshua continued to be faithful in their practice of Sabbath observance, Sabbatarianism did not last long for the majority of the believing Gentiles, who were not obligated to the Sabbath in the same manner as the Jews. There were holdouts such as the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, Jacobites, Thomas Christians, and Oriental Orthodox churches who continued to observe a seventh-day Sabbath beyond the first century. In fact, some scholars believe that some Gentile believers were still attending synagogues on the Sabbath, perhaps as late as the 6th century CE. Yet for the most part, Gentile Christianity began to neglect the Sabbath as early as the late 1st century, as Christianity began the process of defining itself against Judaism. So how does this lead us to Sunday worship? Several scholars reconstruct a logical progression. The first day of the week, Sunday, began to be honored by believers very early on in the development of the faith. Christians mark the first day alongside of the Sabbath because of the significance of the associations with both the resurrection and the giving of the Spirit. In fact, we even find subtle evidence of a nascent first day practice in apostolic writings. Albeit it is more likely believers originally met Saturday night after the Sabbath, when traveling, carrying, and cooking restrictions were lifted, and they could congregate and commemorate the resurrection. Among Gentile believers, observance of the seventh day began to fade, primarily because Gentile Christians became eager to prove that they were not Jewish, but also perhaps due to the fact that it grew cumbersome to honor both days. As the Gentile Christian community became severed from the synagogue, Sabbath practice seemed unnecessary and irrelevant. Hence, Sunday worship and then finally Sunday rest would eventually win out. No pagan gods in the closet for the church on this one. It was simply a logical progression which leads us to where we are today. However troublesome and sorrowful this history is, we cannot simply chalk it up to paganism.